Welcome everyone to a weekly chug which we'll call The History of Rishonim and Achronim, which, as the title implies, has the goal is to, I guess the goal is threefold. First, to learn more about each of the Rishonim and Achronim who we're going to discuss, many of whom are famous, many of whom are some of whom are slightly less famous, and we need to know things about them. But second, historical context. It matters, or it often matters, when a person lived. What was the world like? What was the attitude of Gentiles towards the Jewish community at the time? It often is very, very helpful. Not always, but it's often very helpful in helping us understand why Rishonim and why Achronim said certain things and held certain ideas and beliefs. And the third is, you know, simply to understand where people fit in history. So, for example, if you tell me, well, Rashi said this because he was concerned by the Rambam, who I would know immediately it's a mistake. The Rambam lived after Rashi. That's an easy one. But it comes up very often. And knowing who is a Talmud of who and who influenced who is often very, very helpful in sketching out, you know, in helping to understand why Rishonim, why Achronim held the way they did and felt the way they did. That's big gadol, the goal of this mini course. I give this once a week in Yeshivat Haaretzion. You're hearing a recording that I'm recording separately because I didn't record the chug this week, so it loses the energy and the questions and back and forth. But hopefully, God willing, I'll remember to record it every week, and we'll go from there. I've chosen to start with Rashi. Rashi was not the first Rishon. Rabbeinu Chananel came before him. The Rif came slightly before him. Rashi lived from 1040 to 1105. 1040 is a bit of a guess. It happens to be the year that Rabbeinu Gershom Maor HaGola died. And some people suggest that, you know, it was a convenient year to say Rashi was born because we like to have things line up. The previous Gadol Hador died in 1040, and he was replaced by the next Gadol Hador, which Rashi was, obviously, in 1040. It happens to be historically, I learned this, that when somebody's not famous when they're born, certainly if they're born, you know, that long ago, nobody really records it. So the birth date can often be, you know, off by a number of years. As opposed to when Rashi died in 1105, you know, Rashi had become the Rashi who we know and love, and therefore everybody knows what year Rashi died in. Just to give a sense, Rabbeinu Chananel, who's thought of as the first Rishon, or argued the first Rishon, he lived from 965 to 1055. So it's easy to think about it in these terms. The Gaonim lived up until, let's say, the year 1000. Rishonim lived more or less, you know, people often point to the Mechaber and the Ramah as the demarcating line between Rishonim and Achronim. They lived in the 1500s. So you have the period of the Gaonim up to 1000, the next 500 years, again, give or take, none of these things are absolutely, you know, clear in any text. There is no din, you know, who's a Rishon and Achron. But Begadol, you say Rishonim went till 1500, the Ramah and the Mechaber, and then the period of the Achronim, the early Achronim started until, you know, later in the process when we get, let's say, to Rav Ovadia and the Rav, people who lived recently, Rav Ovadia in particular, you know, the later or the latest of the Achronim. Okay, why start with Rashi? Well, for the most part, because Rashi was Rashi. Right? Rashi was the first Rebbe, or is the first Rebbe, of every one of us. Many, many years ago, I remember there was like this parlor game where everybody did it. You know, the five historical figures you'd most want to have dinner with. And I remember I was talking to my father-in-law, Zichron Levracha, and I told him, and he seemed hurt. He said, not Rashi? And I remember thinking, like, why is Rashi not on my list? And the answer is, you know, we're so used to Rashi from the time we're little kids that I think somehow, you know, the magic wears off at some point. Certainly when you start learning Gemara and Tosus asks a question on Rashi from Sanhedrin and you think to yourself, wow, Tosus seems really smart. You know, Rashi apparently didn't know there was a Gemara in Sanhedrin that disagreed. So the answer as you get older is, of course, Rashi knew. And Rashi was subtle in ways that continue to surprise us at all ages. And we'll come back to this point. But really, it would be impossible to exaggerate Rashi's impact on everything. There are well over 300 super commentaries written on Rashi. I mean, Rashi became a text that was studied by others. The first Hebrew print book ever printed in Rome in 1469 was a Chumash with Rashi. In fact, people say, just listen to the language, I learned Chumash Rashi. They don't even say Chumash with Rashi. I learned Chumash with Ramban. I learned Chumash with Ibn Ezra, but I learned Chumash Rashi. More than that, I think that Rashi's popularity changed a halacha. I know that sounds strange, but the Gemara in Brachos, Daf Chesam and Aleph, provides us with a mitzvah, La'olam yashlim adam parashiyosavim hatzibur shnai mikov echad targum. The Gemara says, you know, a person should finish laying the parasha twice and once with targum every week. And the Gemara has an example, va'afilu atarot v'divon. There are names of places. Shekol ham, meaning you have to read targum or you have to read the pasuk a third time. There is no targum for atarot v'divon. They're names of places. So Rashi, commenting on the Gemara, says, you know, it's targum and you need to read targum on every pasuk. And if there's a pasuk that doesn't have targum because it's just a translation, the pasuk says, you know, Ruvain, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, right? These have no targum. They're just names. You have to read that pasuk a third time. The Rambam, who lived basically 100 years after Rashi. Right, we said Rashi was born in 1040. The Rambam was born in 1138. Rashi died in 1105. The Rambam died in 1204. Big discussion when we do the Rambam. This comes up sometimes. Did the Rambam ever see a Rashi? Scholars disagree about that. But on this point, it's clear. The Rambam in Hilchos Tfila, Perek Yud Gimel Halacha Chaf Hei, quotes our halacha. Rambam quotes the halacha from the Gemara in Brachos Daf Ches and then adds, "Upasuk she'ein bo targum, koreu shalosh pa'amim." It's clear in the Rambam that you have to read every pasuk and there has to be a targum on every pasuk. What's also clear in the Rambam is that Rashi wouldn't qualify. You can't do Shnai Mikra Vecha Targum with Rashi. Rashi didn't write on every Pasuk. We know this. Not in the Gemara, not in the Rambam. But essentially, 100 years after the Rambam, 150 years after the Rambam, the Tur wrote his Sefer Halacha. The Tur was born in 1269. Okay, he moved to Spain. The Tur wrote his Sefer Halacha, and he writes as follows. V'im lomada parsha beferish Rash chashiv kimo targum. If you use Rashi for shnai mikra v'echa targum, it works. Why? Shavanat ha targum ela sheyavin ha'inyan. Exists so that you'll understand the pasuk. Then he continues, it says, avalim kore b'shar lazlo. But if you just read another translation, it doesn't work. The Torah is saying two things. The Torah says, first of all, no one really understands targum anymore. Right? The Targum is written in Aramaic. Jews didn't live in Bavel anymore. Jews in Spain and Provence and wherever in Germany. No reason to think they understood Targum any better than we do. So says the Torah, if you look behind the reason for the halacha of Shnai Mikra, it makes more sense to learn Rashi than it does to learn Onkelos. But behind it, I suspect, is simply the fact that Rashi became so popular so quickly, even before a printing press. You know, so many versions of Rashi were circulated. I just think Jews all over the world, or all over Europe at least, and maybe South Africa, maybe in Africa also, they were learning Rashi. And the Tur almost had no choice. The halacha is clear. You need Targum on every pasuk. Rashi doesn't qualify. But my sense is the popularity of Rashi and the love people had for Rashi was so great that the Tur said, okay, I look around, I go to shul, everybody's learning Rashi. So therefore, Rashi's going to qualify as Targum. I know that sounds a little, maybe revolutionary. And then later on, when the Mechaber wrote the Shulchan Aruch, of course he quoted Rashi as being one of the possibilities for Shnai Mikra. And then it just became. You don't meet anybody nowadays. I'm not aware of any contemporary posek who would be mayiz to say, you know, you can't be yotzei in the midst of Shnai Mikra with Rashi. You really need Targum. You know, Rashi earned his place. Okay, what do we know about Rashi? Truth is, not that much. He lived a long time ago, and the history is kind of stretchy. sketchy. Sorry. His father is Rabbi Yitzchak, which is also interesting, right? Why is he Rashi? All other Rishonim, you know, Rav Moshe ben Maimon, Rav Shimon ben, you know, Rav Yosef ben, everybody has a B, the Rashba, the Rambam, the Ramban. Why is Rashi not with a bet? Why isn't he Rav Shlomo ben Yitzchak? So two explanations. One is great, one is better. The first is, well, it would have made him Rashbi, and Rashbi was taken by the Tana. So he couldn't be Rashbi. The other is, no, he was Rabban Shel Yisrael. He wasn't Ben Yitzchak, he was Rabban Shel Yisrael. Okay, both are interesting, both are fun. His father name was Yitzchak. His father is quoted once in Avodah Zarah. He is not the Amar of Yitzchak of the first Rashi on the Torah. Rashi was an only child. Not just an only son, an only child. His father was a vintner. There are many, many miraculous legends about how Rashi was born, but you know that's not here. That's not the purpose of our getting together to discuss it. I'm certainly not dismissing them, but I just want to focus on the things that are fact. What's fact? Rashi had three daughters. Miriam, who married the Rivan, who finished Rashi in a number of places. Yocheved, who married Rav Meir ben Shmuel. And Rachel, who married somebody named Eliezer, but was divorced. Now, what are the grandsons? Well, Yocheved and Meir had four sons. One is Shmuel ben Meir, who became the Rashbam. One is Yaakov ben Meir, who became Rabbeinu Tam. One is Yitzhak ben Meir, who became the Rivam. Said another way, Rashi literally gave birth to the Balei HaTosfos. Right? The Balei HaTosfos who came after Rashi and wrote the Tosfosim that we know, Tosfosim on the Daf of the Gemara, Tosfosim that are quoted elsewhere, they started with Rashi's grandsons. Okay, we'll come back to that. Okay, what's Rashi's background? Rashi was born in France in a city called Troyes, that is alternatively pronounced Troyes and Troyes. There wasn't much Jewish education to be had in France at the time. It was not a center of, it was not an intellectual center of learning for the Jewish people. So Rashi went where everybody went in those days, to Germany. He went to Worms, to Mayence. He went to the yeshiva that was originally founded by Rabbeinu Gershom Maor HaGola. His main Rebbe is called Rabbeinu Yaakov ben Yakar. And that's where Rashi got his education. If we back up for a second, Rashi was married at 17 and shortly thereafter went to Germany without his wife. Talk about Messias Nefesh. Rashi would come home for the Shalosh Regalim. But more or less, it's not clear exactly how long, but certainly at a minimum, from 17 to 25, he spent his time in Germany learning, coming back only from time to time. Okay, at some point, either 25 or 30, the history is not 100% clear, he returns to Troyes, to Troyes, and he becomes part of the Beis Din. It's clear he came back and you know people recognized who he was. Eventually, he became the Av Beis Din. But from an early age, when he came back, he started writing tshuvos. Okay, it's funny. We don't think of Rashi as the person who wrote tshuvos. We have about 300 of them that he wrote that are still extant. But that's really where he started making his reputation. But around 1070, 30, 35, however old Rashi was when it started, he founded his own yeshiva. Now, in retrospect, this becomes an enormously important fact when we look at the history and the development of Torah Sheba'al Peh and Rishonim. Because towards the end of Rashi's life, and we'll come back to this, the Crusades hit in the 1090s, to be specific. And while they had Crusades in France, the Crusades in Germany were devastating. And because of Rashi's power and because of who he was and his intellect, and you know, the center of Torah learning moved from Germany to France. And that's totally a result of Rashi. All of Chachmei Provence, they all came to learn in Rashi's yeshiva. And again, at some point, Germany was almost all wiped out. The Talmidei Chachamim really suffered in Germany. That helped. But Rashi founding yeshiva in France was the beginning of the movement that made France, at the time, the center of Torah learning in Europe. Okay. What was Rashi like as a person? So here, the good news is I have a picture of Rashi in my sukkah. Most of us do. I hate to ruin it for you. It's almost certainly not Rashi. But when I think of the picture, you know, he has sharp, piercing eyes, and he's kind of smiling, and he has a beautiful, beautiful, white, bushy beard. Turns out that's who Rashi was. He was exactly who we want him to be. He was humble. In many, many tshuvos, he wrote, you know, who am I to interfere? You think to yourself, what do you mean? You're Rashi. No. He relied as much as possible on his Rebbeim. He admitted mistakes. Most importantly, and this is something most of us have come across in learning Chumash Rashi, he admitted when he didn't know. Lo yadati lama nichpal, lo yadati mama lamdenu, right? I think there are 14 times that Rashi says something like that on a pasuk in Chumash. Now again, when you consider the fact that Rashi doesn't write on every pasuk, he simply could have left it out. He didn't have to admit, listen, there's something going on in this pasuk which I don't understand. But it speaks to his humility, and it speaks to his honesty. And as we go through figures in history, we will note, because it's so obvious, that you need more than just intellect. To become great, you can't just be smart. You need more. And Rashi had more. Rashi was beloved by anybody who met him. And despite the fact that he wrote, you know, the greatest Perushim ever, part of it, part of his success, and part of how quickly it became part of the norm, was simply the fact that people loved Rashi. In fact, even when people disagree with Rashi, they love him. The Ramban, in his Hakdama on the Torah, describes, you know, how much he wants to write a Perush. And then he says, what am I going to do? Va'asim lima'or panai neirot ha-menorah ha-tehorah. Right? I'm going to write by the light of the great menorah. Who's that? Perushei Rabbeinu Shlomo Ateret Tzvi Utzfirat Tifara. Rashi's the first. Muchtar bin nimusei bin mikra bin mishna u'bigmara lo mishpat ha-bechora. Rashi came first. Therefore, bidvara ve'hegeh, I will learn his words. Ba'ahavatam eshkeh, I will bask in the love of his words. V'imahem yihye lanu masa'u matan drishava chakira. Says the Ramban, I'm not going to accept as the gospel everything Rashi writes. But know this, Rashi was first. Rashi is a person I overwhelmingly respect. And with overwhelming respect, I will from time to time ask questions on Rashi and disagree with him and engage with him. I cannot think of another figure in the intellectual Jewish history that was more respected than Rashi. Again, you know, the Rambam is an overwhelming figure. Rambam, you know, was bigger than anything and anybody. But he had opponents. And people attacked him personally, as was the case with almost everybody. I could not find any personal attacks on Rashi. He was revered, and people disagreed with him from time to time. Okay, often people ask, certainly with respect to Poskim, but even with respect to regular, you know, was he a machmir, was he a mekil? So it's an unfair question. What I could say about Rashi was that he was thoughtful. Rashi, in a famous Rashi in Maseches Beitza, Daf Bet Amud Bet, the Gemara uses the phrase, koach dehetera adifle. Right, the akula, the power of akula is stronger than a chumrah. And Rashi says, and it's common sense, but it speaks to who he is. Tov lo lahashmienu koach divrei hamatir. The Gemara needs to give us the explanation for the person who's matir, who allows it. Shehu somech al shmuato ve'ino yarei lahatir. Because he has an explanation, he has a rationale, and therefore he's not afraid to say it's permitted. Aval koach ha'usrin eina ra'aya. But to be machmir, to say that it's usur to, you know, to skip rope on Shabbos, anybody could do that. Shehakol yicholin lahachmir va'afilu bidavar hamutar. Sadly, Rashi said, anybody could be machmir. You don't need a rationale. Even if it's mutar, you could be machmir. So we're more interested in kulos. Okay, whether that speaks to Rashi's philosophy or not, I don't want to say. But it's an important Rashi to know. Okay, let's talk about the time that Rashi lived. Broadly speaking, to live in the 1000s in France, It was a good time for Jews. Jews were bankers and artisans and vintners and currency traders and money. They were everything. Anybody who learns a sampling of Rashi knows that he was, you know, the first Rabbi Google. He knew everything. He was very worldly. He knew grammar and banking and currency and trade and engraving and weaving and agriculture. You know, he describes Big Day Kahuna by noble women and what they wore. Yeah, he was very, very worldly. More than that, Rashi had a pretty good relationship with his Christian neighbors. In fact, the Bible was a meeting ground at the time for Jews and Christians. There were many, many polemics, not dangerous ones like in the time of the Ramban, but they talked about these things. Christian biblical exegesis started in the middle of the 11th century. Now, here's a very interesting thing. Christians distinguished between the letter and the spirit. We, Lahavdil, would probably talk about the difference between Pshat and Drash. Okay? That's where it starts. So if you ask yourself, and I think it's a good question, if you ask yourself, what motivated Rashi to write his Perush Al HaTorah? And you have to understand, when Rashi wrote his Perush Al HaTorah, it was thought of as Pshat. Yes, the Rashbam came later, and the Rashbam claimed that his was more Pshat, and that his grandfather told him that if I had to do it over again, I would write a more Pshat-based Perush. I once heard Professor Lukshin from Toronto speak in Yeshiva. He's thought of as the greatest scholar in the world on the Rashbam. He said he doesn't believe the story. He said Rashi was his grandfather, so he wanted to make his grandson feel good. So he said, if I could do it over again, I'd write more of a Pshat-based Perush. But he thought, no, Rashi wrote exactly the Perush that he wanted to write. So let's ask ourselves, what was it like before Rashi? Let's say you had to have Givat Dvar Torah this Friday, this Shabbos in Shul. If you lived before Rashi, what did you have? You had Gemaros. You had Midrash Rabbah. You had Midrash Tanchuma. You had Midrash Halacha. But that's it. You know, when Rashi sat down, the way I imagine it, in his study in France, where I see him hunched over in the dark with a candle, I made that up. When he wanted to write a Perush, that's all he had. He had a Shas, if he was lucky, and he had Medrashim. And from this, he had to create a Perush. Now, why the interest in a Perush, and why the interest in a Pshat-based Perush? So that's hard. It's hard to know, and this is complete speculation. But many scholars claim as follows. Once the Christians started learning Tanakh, and started being more aggressive and more influential, Rashi felt like he had to move Pshat back into the world because the spirit allowed them to say anything. Take a pasuk in Yeshayo, Perek Zayin. Lachen yitain Hashem hu lachem ot, hine ha'almahara. The word alma means young woman. It doesn't mean virgin. V'yoledet bein v'karat shmo Immanuel. Okay, which obviously is a pasuk that they use tragically to claim, you know, that Jesus, that's the source. It's not the source for a million reasons. But part of the reason is because Alma doesn't mean virgin. But if there's no Pshat, if you're just learning Drash, if it's just the spirit, see, you could say anything. Yeah, it doesn't really mean that. It's not the right time. He wasn't born until hundreds and hundreds of years later. But everything goes if it's the spirit. So one of the explanations is Rashi wanted to bring Pshat back into vogue because otherwise we were giving up ownership of Chumash. So that's probably, you know, that's as good an explanation as any for why he wrote and how he wrote. But how did he write? So Rashi doesn't tell us. The Ramban has an introduction and the Rashbam has an introduction. Most Rishonim wrote introductions to the Perushim. Rashi did not. But this Rashi is generally thought of as his introduction. Rashi in Perek Gimel of Sefer Bereishis, Pasuk Ches, the Pasuk says, Vayishmu et kol Hashem Elokim mitalech bagan ruach hayom, Adam and Chava, having just eaten from the Eitz Hadas, are terrified of God and they hide from him. Obviously, the pasuk is strange. What did they hear? God doesn't walk. So Rashi says, Yesh Midrashe Agada Rabim. There are many Medrashim. Ukvar Sidrum Rabotenu al Mechonam Bebreshit Rabbah. You could look them all up in Breshit Rabbah. Ubisham Rekamot. Va'ani lo bati ela lipshuto shel mikra. I exist to tell you pshat. Ule agada hamiyashevet divrei hamikra davar dibur alofanav. I'm here to tell you pshat or to pick a medrash. What medrash do I pick? I pick the medrash that is most correlated with pshat. So the way I see it, Rashi has a pasuk, and he thinks there's what to be learned from the pasuk, and it needs an explanation. So he opens up medrashim. There are six medrashim on the pasuk. Rashi tells us, I'm going to pick the one medrash that's most pshat based. Yeah, it's true, it's a medrash, but I'll pick the one that I think is closest to the pshat. And that's what Rashi does, and it, obviously it works for him, and it works for us. Why was Rashi so popular? This is a question that scholars ask, and it's tied to the question of who was Rashi's target audience. And here, I think, the greatness of Rashi was that he was able to write for more than one audience. I think Rashi's target audience was me, and you, and anybody else who's listening to this. Rashi wrote for each of us Ba'asher Husham, because Rashi exists on different levels. When you're a kid, Rashi exists to tell you what the word means. But as you get older, Rashi's a goldmine for deep ideas, really, really deep ideas, which he conveys with the use of a particular word or some, you know, Rashi is the master of being concise. And yet, as you get older, you start finding things in Rashi that you never saw before. And I think that's really his greatness. He operates on two levels. And I remember when I was zocheh to be in the shiur of Chaim Soloveitchik, you know, he used to say, when you find a Rashi on a Gemara and it doesn't seem to be straightforward, it's because Rashi's aware of another sugya. And the other sugya is inconsistent with this sugya. And so Rashi is trying to harmonize the two. In his world, there was what he called controlling sugya. If Rashi thought that the real Gemara that controls is a particular Gemara, he would reinterpret other Gemaras to be in line with that. You know, Tosus asks and explains and gives you the whole format and the whole background. Rashi doesn't do that. He just does it in a word. So just like Rashi on Gemara, as we grow up, we start finding more in Rashi. So too, Rashi on Chumash operates on a number of different levels. Okay, when we talk about Rashi quoting Medrashim, which is very important, Rashi often changed the words of Medrashim, not to mislead us, God forbid, to make it more concise, or to make the Medrash, the point of the Medrash clearer. So if you ever see a Medrash in Rashi and it really seems problematic, you should probably look it up, because Rashi doesn't claim to cite Medrashim, word for word. Next, don't want to disappoint anybody, Rashi almost certainly could not read Rashi script. It got the name Rashi because when Daniel Bamberg printed the first Shas in 1520-something, Daniel Bamberg not being a Jew at all, he needed to distinguish between, and other printers needed to distinguish between the text, between Psukim, between the Gemara, and Perushim. So I think it's unknown who made up Rashi text, but it certainly wasn't Rashi. Okay, just to add to what we said till now, as we come to the end, Professor Avram Grossman, who may be the greatest scholar of Rashi in the world, wrote a biography on Rashi, thought that more than Rashi's commentaries, which obviously, were important beyond anything. I think to this day, Bavli beat out Yerushalmi because Rashi wrote on Bavli and not on Yerushalmi. He says his greatness and the affection people had for him and his popularity also relates to his personality. He said, one, Rashi was humble and simple. Two, Rashi had a pursuit of the truth, which people felt. Three, Rashi had respect for his fellow man. Four, Rashi had confidence in his own creative inspiration. And five, Rashi believed deeply in his mission of being a communal leader. All that is true, but on top of all of that, and I'm sure Professor Grossman knows this, is that Rashi loved Jews. Rashi loved the Jewish people, and Rashi was optimistic about us, and it comes through. I had this chus when I was a Talmud in Gush to learn Chumash with Rav Mordechai Breuer, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, one of the great Tanakh scholars of the 20th century. He pointed out something we all know, but he had to point it out. The first pasuk of every Sefer and Chumash, Rashi finds a way to say something nice and something inspiring about Jews. Beginning of the Torah, right? Koach ma'asav higid la'amo la'tet lahem nachlat goyim. God wanted us to know how much he loves us and how great he is and that the world belongs to us. First pasuk of Shmos, right? We just counted the Jews at the end of Vayechi. No, count them again. Afa pi shimenan b'chayehen b'shmotam chazau menam b'mitatan lahodiachi batan. You should know how much God loves the Jews. Vayikra. Why does he use the word Vayikra? L'chol dibrot l'chol amirot l'chol tziviyim kadma kriya lashon chiba. It's a loving expression. Beginning of Bamidbar. Mitoch chiba tam lefanav moteh otam achol moneh otam achol sha'a. Beginning of Dvarim. He says, Moshe is giving them tochacha, but he didn't want to do it openly. Lefikach satam atadvarim v'hizkiram beremez mipnei kvodan shel Yisrael. Okay, so you get the sense, none of this is necessary in the Psukim, but you get the sense that Rashi loved Jews. And certainly, it's generally understood that Rashi's parish was put together at the very, very end of his life. By then, his community really needed inspiration. Right? That was after the First Crusades. And people died in France. Again, many more people died in Germany. But a lot of the anger, whenever you feel an angry Rashi, it's towards Christianity. And I think, you know, the Crusades helped Rashi learn to hate Christians. And that comes through also. But along with his hate for them and the church who massacred people, comes his overwhelming love for Jews. And more than anything, I think, when you learn a Rashi, you finish learning Rashi and you sense that he's not just your Rebbe, but he's a person who wants to see you succeed and who loves you in a strange way. Okay, that's it for Rashi. Next week, the Rambam. Yashkach to everybody.